Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Mark Glennon from Wirepoints. I'm here with my two superb colleagues, Ted Dabrowski and John Klingner. Today we're going to talk about a milestone that Illinois hit, not a good milestone, $500 billion in total unfunded liabilities for Illinois state and local pensions. Before we get to that sad news, I guess, Ted, that we did have some good news today. The Chicago City Council passed a law to help make sure that dogs get allowed into bars. We'll take that, won't we, for some good news?
Well, that's what Chicago needs. It's exactly the kind of medicine we need after all the disaster and mess we've had. So good news.
I think it's good news. I'm an animal lover, and this is my way of apologizing if you hear my dog barking. So Ted, tell us what we found out. You and John did some very thorough research, adding up some numbers. And what's the bad news there?
Well, you know, the bad news is let's be wonky for 1 minute, get the math out of the way. The math is important, but what it means is more important. But let's start with that. You know, what John and I did is, you know, Moody's Investor Service, Moody's the rating agency, they're the ones who determine whether investors will buy our bonds or not. They determine what interest rates we pay on those bonds. They determine, you know, whether we get junk rated or not. So we listen a lot to what Moody says about Illinois, and they're comparing the 50 states across the country. So they, as part of their process in rating the creditworthiness of Illinois, they calculate the amount of pension debts at the state and local levels. And they don't get as much attention because most people listen to the official state numbers in Illinois. But the Moody's numbers are more conservative. I think they're more realistic. And when we added up all the pension debts across Illinois, Cook County, Chicago, all the cities, when we looked at the retiree health insurance debts, which are you know, what a lot of pensioners get, free retiree health care, a lot of them get that. When we added it all up, it totaled $530 billion. It's a massive number, $500 trillion. It's a new milestone, as you said. And you know, a better way to understand that is to say that, you know, when you divide it up amongst the 4.9 million families in Illinois, or households in Illinois, it's about $110,000 a household. So it's a massive, call it a second mortgage if you want, that every Illinois household is on the hook for, that they have to pay in future taxes over time for old services that have already been rendered. And it's going to be a real, real pain on people because it's more taxes, cut services, worsening government performance. It's a scary story.
How does that compare nationally? I know you've looked at the comparisons both of you have on a per capita basis. What kind of shape are we in compared to others, sort of our competitive position on this?
Yeah, I just did a little tweet storm on that. We are the extreme outliers. When you look at the total number of debts, we're looking at the state level only because that's the easiest to compare and easy comparable data. Looking at state level pensions, ignoring the local part, we have the most pension debts in the country. It's the biggest part of a state economy. In Illinois, it's the biggest part of our economy, bigger than any other state in the country. It eats up more of the budget than in any other state in the country. We have the worst funded pensions in any state of the country. We are the extreme outlier in virtually all of those things. And so that's what makes it really scary for Illinois, because it's not like we're middling somewhere in the pack and we're not doing much. We are the extreme outliers. And the big problem with this is that there's zero discussion about pension reform in Illinois. As a matter of fact, most of the laws they've been passing recently are to add benefits or to increase the pension debt. And there's nothing being done, not a word being said.
Let's talk a little bit about what this means for ordinary people. These numbers seem kind of amorphous and distant, I think, to the average person, but they are, in fact, filtering down to how their local governments function. Give us some insight into that.
Well, you know, these kind of numbers, you know, Illinois has been paying the price for this for a long time. We've had the highest property taxes or the second highest property taxes in the nation for a while. But if you look at the last decade, you know, these debts put a huge strain on property values. They put a huge strain on on local economies. They put a huge strain on budgets. One of the outlier positions I mentioned was that, you know, in Illinois, pensions eat up about 25 to 30% of the state budget. So, you know, when we're allocating money for public safety and healthcare and education, well, 25% of our budget has to go mostly for old debts, not for new work, but old debts of pensions. Compare that to places like, I think I forget which one is which, Wisconsin or Indiana. It's 2% of their budget, so they're not encumbered by these huge costs, and they can therefore spend money on what people need, or they can have much, much lower taxes. But in the end, Mark, this just destroys people's home values. It hurts the job prospects in cities. It's taking away savings from people, and it's what makes Illinois so expensive, and it's what's squeezing people out of the state. So we're kind of in this circle, this cycle, this vicious cycle where it's too expensive to live here. There's not enough good jobs, and a lot of that is just the pressure of these pension costs going up, up, up.
Yeah, for people not familiar with pensions, make sure you understand what this number is, this new $530 billion. It's not what the pensions owe or what they're estimated to owe in the future. It's the difference between what they owe and what they have set aside, plus the expected earnings on what they have set aside. So that's the unfunded liability number. The actuaries go through and make an estimate of how much they'll have to pay out. That's a much larger number than $530 billion, and subtract out the investments that they have and the expected earnings on those investments. And the reason why this number is higher than you get from the state's official numbers is because Moody's is realistic on their assumptions about how much to expect from those earnings. So they use a much lower expectation that's in accord mostly with what the private sector is expected to do. The private sector, of course, has to do things that the government doesn't have to do with their pensions. There are still some private sector pensions. So that's why we look to Moody's numbers. We think they're far more accurate and reasonable than the official government numbers that you always hear about.
And not to mention, of course, that Moody's is, you know, Moody's rates Illinois and, you know, controls, you know, helps control, you know, exactly how much you know, people get for the, or how much bonds cost, you know, that the state issues. And they're the ones that could put Illinois into junk if they rate things are getting worse. So that's why Moody's numbers matter.
That's right. They're the ones that count when it comes to selling the bonds. It drives how much interest taxpayers are going to have to pay on that borrowed money.
Mark, another point I want to make, just, you know, and I've been making this, and it's something that, you know, you and I discussed probably a couple of years ago, and it kind of hit me, and I look for it now. But you and I were discussing a while back that when property taxes go up so high, it really has an impact on people's ability to maintain their homes and the value of their homes, because the bigger those property taxes are, the less money they have in general. Bottom line is home values go down. And, you know, as I've driven around the state in places like Peoria and Decatur and Rockford and Danville, you look at the housing stock and you start to realize something. A lot of the areas, and if you have to drive around enough and look at the different neighborhoods, but you start to see that people stop taking care of their homes because it's just not worth it. One of the statistics that John here has picked up was that Illinois houses in the last decade are the fifth worst performing in the country. They're down after inflation, where most of the country is up when you take inflation costs into account. Home values are down, and people stop investing in their homes when they know their home values are going down and where their property taxes are going up so much that it just destroys their home value. And that's what you're seeing. I saw so much stock that looks like nobody's taking care of their homes anymore. And that's where it gets really scary.
Sure. People are rational, and especially commercial builders. Property taxes are 3%, 4%, 5% in many places around the city. So why would you put a big addition on your home and increase the value if you're effectively going to have a perpetual mortgage that's senior to your interest and senior to the lender's mortgage, actually, your bank, if you have a mortgage, for that kind of amount, 3%, 4%, 5%. That makes all the difference in the world, especially to commercial builders. It's a huge discouragement for people to build something new in those places. And no one in sight, no reforms in sight. And that's what I'd like to turn to. This is a really a large milestone, $500 billion. But what reaction do we have from the state? There are no reforms whatsoever under discussion in Springfield right now. In fact, Governor Pritzker is out bragging that he's turned the corner on state finances and on pensions in particular. Amazingly, he was contacted by Cranes about our new report of the $500 billion, and he said he's flattening the curve or something on pensions, and he specifically cited the state buyout program, which is a floundering program. We've documented this ad infinitum on Wire Points. It doesn't add up to much savings, if any, for the state. The governor has never produced a report of any kind to support any claims that that's going to save anything material for the pension system. And whatever money does go towards the buyouts, by the way, the taxpayers have to pay for. There's a special bond issue that the state has done, two of them, to pay for those buyouts, much of it is, which has gone unused, by the way. And so that money's sitting there and we're paying interest on it. So all we're getting is baloney on this. And, you know, tell us, give me a little more sense, Ted. You've been working on these things for, what, 10, 12 years now, and somehow this just doesn't get the attention it deserves. Why not?
Well, Mark, that's the big question. You know, this problem gets worse every year. We used to be a AAA-rated state back in 1990, and here we are 30 years later, and we were almost a junk about 10 months ago. So, you know, why are we in such a bad mess? And, you know, there's a lot of speculation. One, we have a lot of corruption in Illinois, and we know that that's a big part of the entire state apparatus. So you can always blame that one. But I think the two big things are, it's just the power of the unions over time. They've been granted more and more power. And so they keep negotiating better and better salaries. They keep being granted by both sides of the aisle, but, you know, Thompson, Edgar, you know, they were just as complicit in granting bigger and bigger pension benefits. And so as salaries have gone up, as union power has gone up, as those pension benefits have gone up, there's been nothing to stop it. And then you have to add kind of this, and you please add into this, Mark or John, you add in this complicit court system and a complicit media system, and nobody really wants to do a whole lot about this because there's too many people with hands in the cookie jar. And so even as these debts grow by the billions each year, and even as the government says they have a balanced budget each year, and we know that those things aren't able to coexist at the same time, the numbers get worse. And it's simply the fact that we have a constitution that protects increasing pensions anytime, but never allows anything to lower them. And you've got a labor power and labor contracts that continue to demand more and more. And some of the for the unions, the best labor contracts in the country. So it's out of control, and nobody seems to be able to get in the way of it. We're trying to make noise. We're trying to jump up and down. It's why we're bringing up this $500 billion. The math eventually won't work, but the system's against the ordinary person right now.
Well, the most recent problem, too, is there is so much news out there. I mean, every day you look at the news and you're just dumbfounded by the insanity. That's the only word for it. The crime, things going on at the federal level, people are just pulling their hair out after, you know, story after story after story. So you really have competition for eyeballs. It's true that historically the press has not paid a lot of attention to this problem. You know, they've kind of come and gone at certain points in time, but it's really getting swamped now by so much other news as well. That's a real big challenge, and that's one of the reasons we keep coming back to this topic. Because we have a crisis, and we may have other crises as well, but you can't forget about this one.
Well, yeah, this one is, you know, all those others that we have, we've got COVID going on, we've got the horrific crime issues going on, you've got the big battles over who controls kids, parents, or schools. These are all big, big issues, and I can see why pensions just become unimportant for the moment. because it's not like an immediate thing that's facing you in your face every day, but structurally it's destroying people's home values, it's destroying their savings. And when those big property taxes come up, when the government starts to come after you for those $500 billion or those $110,000, however you want to look at it, when they start to come after you, it's going to matter. And it's also, you know, helping crumble our state. And that means job prospects are down. Companies won't want to come here. People won't move into Illinois. And, you know, we're trying to signal that now because it's kind of hard to see it all happening as it happens every day. But yeah, we're trying to get more noise on it.
And fellas, I see a problem coming up too, and how the story is going to be told honestly. And that problem is this. The stock market performed wonderfully for the 12-month period that ended on June 30 when the state's fiscal year ended. Those numbers will show up in the next pension reports. The actuarial reports will come up probably within a couple of months. They'll readjust the required contributions. It'll be very good news because the pensions probably did quite well. And it may be a year, in fact, when the pensions don't deteriorate further because the actual cash contributions that go in are not sufficient to keep the pensions from deteriorating further. But if the performance of those underlying assets have a very good year, as they just did, it'll look good for a year. And I fully expect, tell me if you think I'm right, that Governor Pritzker is going to come out and say, look, I fixed the pensions. This is the first year in 20 that we've actually improved the situation. What do you envision there? What do you think we're going to see when those actuarial reports come out?
I think you're exactly right on that. That's we are going to see an improvement, a slight one. But the issue is that you might see just a little bit of paying off the debt for 1 year. But that's just the thing. These are the biggest gains, the biggest market gains in 30 years. And to say therefore we expect them to say that we solved the problem, everything's going well. It's like, wait, this is a once in once every 30, every 50 years event. You can't base anything off of this. It's just going to go right back to where it was the year after that. You're just going to face the exact same fiscal cliff. So all they're doing is just all it is another can kick, another delay.
Sure. And then these stock market fluctuations for a year or two or three really aren't meaningful. I mean, it could all be reversed in 2 weeks. I mean, a lot of people have expected a correction of 10-20% for a long time. That could easily happen, if not something much larger.
But Mark, to your point, they're gonna play it like crazy, and you're absolutely right. And nobody's gonna challenge him. There's gonna be a few voices to challenge that narrative he's gonna set, and let's see if the media can join. But they won't. You're right.
And the real scary part is going to be what happens if things do improve a little bit. You're going to have, with the power of the unions and all the rest of that, you might even have pushback to say, okay, it's time to actually, increase benefits again. I mean, it's been a while, but it's certainly possible. The history of Illinois pensions has been, slowly trickling in different benefits, different perks over and over again until you've created the monster that they have today. I mean, if we can just go through just a couple of them, just to give you an idea. I mean, all the way back, for example, for teachers, although this is applicable to a lot of the state level pension funds, state workers, judges, university workers, et cetera, the first pension raise, the COLA benefit, was all the way back in 1969, and the first major one, increasing it to 1.5% simple. That in itself, a lot of pension funds don't even have COLAs, post-retirement increases, as they call them. Illinois started it all the way back then, giving stuff to them, and that's only gone up since then. 1978, they increased, or 1971, they went to, COLAs of 2%, 2% simple. 1978, they went to 3% simple. And then finally, all the way up, most recently in 1990, they decided to compound, that COLA benefit. And then you have all sorts of other things, sick leave being added in, early retirement benefits, upgrading the pension formula in 1998, all these things stacked up on each other to create the, really generous benefits that you have today. And so any good news, of any sort could actually, cause the unions to go back and say, you know, hike them up again because things are going well. And, you know, the fair weather stuff is particularly dangerous.
Yeah. And you single out the teacher's pension. Some people often ask, you know, why are you picking on teachers all the time? Well, we're really not. Most of these pensions have similar terms, especially on that COLA issue that you described. It's just that the teacher's pension is by far the biggest one in the state. It represents like 60% of the unfunded liability at the state level. And there have been, therefore, more studies and more data available on it. And that's the primary reason why teachers get mentioned so much. But that COLA issue and most of it, all the rest, comes from state dictates. These are state mandates, of course, that drive all the pensions, the Chicago pensions, the Cook County pensions, that 650 local police and fire pensions. The terms of those are all dictated by the state. So leadership to fix this has to come from the state.
Right. You can't.
You know, when we announced this report for with passing the $500 billion milestone, we invited all the candidates for governor to join a little webcast that we had on Facebook. Governor Pritzker declined. All the Republican candidates joined. And give us your reaction to that. What did you guys think from the short time slots we gave them? We couldn't do much justice to the pension topic in the short time we gave them, and there wasn't any interchange or debate. But tell us what you thought there.
Well, I was glad that every Republican was willing to come on. At first, I said there's no way that they're going to want to, all of them at the same time, join in on something like this, because they've all got different strategies and different views. Many people are just, most candidates in general are scared to talk about third rail topics like pensions, because they say, you know, it's too early in the cycle. Why talk about something negative? Let's just talk about the easy ones, right? I don't say easy, but, you know, crime and of course taxes and things like that. But pensions is for many candidates something you stay away from. So I thought it was fantastic that Darren Bailey, Paul Shamf, that Jesse Sullivan, and Gary Rabine all came to the table and said, all right, we'll join you, Wire Points. You've put out a scary milestone. When we talked to them, we said, nobody wants to talk about this. Will you join us? I said, yes. And so, it wasn't a moment to try to get into solutions. I think we need a forum to do that. But I was happy that none of them turned it down, and, you know, they all had something to say. I think maybe a different forum would have gotten a much stronger, evoked a little bit more debate if we'd gotten into questions and answers and debate. But I was happy just for the fact that they spoke up, because, you know, Governor Pritzker, the only thing he will say is that pension reform is a fantasy. It can't be done. And that's, he leaves it there.
Yeah, I hope our little event at least planted some questions in the minds of reporters. You know, they need to ask all these candidates and ask Governor Pritzker the hard questions about pensions. They haven't really been doing that yet. It's fair to give these candidates a little time to flesh out their positions and state them in detail, but they should be expected to do that. Governor Pritzker actually has given a pretty clear answer that is no on pension reform, with some minor trivial exceptions like the pension buyout plan that's long been in place that we've talked about. But I do hope those candidates get concrete, and as they develop their positions, we'll be reporting them. We don't have the opportunity to talk to them that much. We're not reporters. The press has to do that. But, you know, let's hope that they do. Let's hope that these other issues swamping the state don't cause us to get brushed aside.
Well, yeah. And I, you know, this is like Greg Hines wrote that article. And you know, in my, you know, email conversation with him, I said, go ask them, you know, if you didn't feel like they talked enough about solutions. And again, that wasn't really the purpose of the call. It was more to bring to life the fact that the problem exists. But I said, Greg Hines, go ask them the question and report on whatever they say. And every news agency should be doing that. So you're absolutely right. I want to bring up one more thing. And I hope, John, you may have this information. Not only has Pritzker said that he doesn't want to reform pensions, But I think it's worthwhile looking at his record in the last couple of years of what he has done to actually increase pension costs. You know, he did that one consolidation of pension funds, which wasn't a pension reform. That was just investing money in a more smart way. And I won't even talk about the details of that, but it wasn't pension reform. But I will tell you this, he's done a lot of things to actually increase pension benefits. John, do you have some of those things in your head?
No, to start off with, you know, just in that very reform you talked about with the police and fire, you know, one of the things that wasn't mentioned is that they actually went in and increased, you know, some of the parts of the tier two benefits for police and fire workers, which actually reduced some of the savings. The tier two, of course, being the 2011, you know, supposed reform that, you know, reduced the pension benefits for everyone, you know, hired after that date. Now, they went back with this recent legislation for local police and fire and change some of those benefits around to make them more generous. So that's not, you know, pushing the curve down, that's pushing it up again. But, you know, going back to teachers, there's also a couple of years ago, the legislature decided to take, you know, salary spiking for teachers, which is one of the more, you know, one of the hated things that we know that they do at the end of a teacher's salary. You know, it used to be something along the lines of something crazy like 20%. You know, for the last 4 years of a teacher's life, you can get, you know, salary increases. Well, and after many years, they kept, you know, putting a cap on that, you know, down and down and down. And most recently, they brought it down to 3%. Well, Pritzker championed and pushed it, you know, bringing it back up to where it was before, 6%. So that's, you know, max 6% every 4 years before a teacher retires. And I'm reminded of what else is there? Look at Chicago, which is a whole nother, you know, can of worms. This is actually worse off than the state is, you know, hiking, you know, COLA benefits for some Chicago firefighters, you know, even though that fund is just 18% funded. I mean, in the private sector, it would be bankrupt many, many times over. And here they are, you know, increasing the benefits, increasing the cost for that fund as well. That's completely in the wrong direction. And it just goes to show just how hard it is to control costs. You know, can you imagine, you know, being a school district and everything is dictated by the state, the 6%, you know, salary spikes, you offer that. And because this is what the state says. So, you know, the unions pressure them to offer the max.
Yeah. That reversal by the legislature and Pritzker of the cap on spiking was perhaps the most galling thing that we've seen of the legislature on this. I mean, it was one of the few victories we had where the legislature had imposed a limitation on the extent to which school districts could spike the pensions. That means they run up the salaries of people they like in the final years of their employment so as to increase the amount of pension that they'll get for the rest of their lives. That's been done flagrantly for many years. We had a reform that capped that, but the legislature reversed it and Governor Pritzker signed off on it. Let's talk about the real big obstacle, of course, to real reform here, which is the state constitution that says pension benefits cannot be reduced or impaired. We believe that amending that is essential to open the path to pension reform. One candidate that we know is on our side on that is Darren Bailey. He's actually got a bill sponsored in the legislature to allow for that kind of amendment. It would have to go on the ballot and be approved by the voters. Of course, it'll get nowhere in the legislature. He's in the minority. He's a Republican. The supermajority of Democrats and Governor Pritzker won't allow that to happen. But what else do we know about that obstacle? What's the latest? Do you think there's any hope for ever getting that on the ballot?
Hey, just Mark, real quick, I just want to just reiterate what you just said about that constitutional amendment that Darren Bailey has put up. That's significant because, you know, it's politically been impossible for anybody to even consider that. And here you go. You've got a sitting legislator who has done that. And I think that's kudos. And everybody should know about that, you know, he's been bold enough to do that. And it's not a popular thing to do, right? So If anybody's looking for a little bit of boldness, yeah, you should look at it there. Sorry to interrupt there on your question.
Well, I totally agree, Ted. And regardless of what you think of any of these candidates on other issues, he's one who has stood up on the one major roadblock to pension reform in Illinois. And it's either that or bankruptcy, which would have to be authorized by the federal government. That's not going to happen, at least in the near term for now. And so do you want to fix the pensions or not? You know, by the way, it's worth remembering that back in 2016, when the state did attempt a meaningful pension reform that was later struck down by the courts, they made express legislative findings that this problem cannot be fixed by tax increases. A Democratic attorney general, Lisa Madigan, went in the court and said that. They hired experts to prove that up. That was their express premise, and it had to be the premise, by the way, that tax increases can't fix this. The reforms that would be available without amending the Constitution aren't going to be sufficient, so the court should allow those reforms to go forward. But now they've totally ran away from that position, and their current position is do nothing. And it's hypocrisy at its highest.
Not to mention that the current situation is far, far, far worse than it was even just, 8 years ago.
Right.
And you know, the funny thing about that is that this was a bill that, you know, Ted and I, and I'm sure when Mark, you, all three of us opposed back then because we knew that it was, you know, nothing more than a Band-Aid. It wouldn't actually fix, you know, the path that Illinois was on. So it was even more dangerous if it had passed, because if it did, then they would have, you know, spent all they had. They would have said, oh, we've done this big thing. We've gone through all of the rigmarole, and we've, you know, fixed, you know, we've done it. And therefore, any chance of fixing anything ever again would be doomed, because we've already done it and reform didn't work. Therefore, just, you know, pay up. So now at least we're back to the situation where we haven't done what we needed to yet. So therefore, that chance is still there to actually fix things.
You're quite right. It was very much oversold. And a lot of Republicans were guilty of that, too. Christine Rodano was at the time the House Minority Leader, Senate Minority Leader. And I remember her saying very clearly that this solves our problem. It certainly did not. But even that small step has been struck down by the courts.
If I remember properly, just to give you the scale of the issue, this was talked about in 2013, and we looked at the numbers and said, okay, if we pass this, the amount of debt the state will, you know, that will be reduced, will bring the state back to where the debt was in 2011. So just 2 years worth of debt would be reduced by this. And they're talking about how it solves things.
Yeah. And Mark, let me just go on the record here. I'm almost certain that bill in some way is going to come back to life, and I think you're going to hear some groups, maybe some candidates, maybe on both sides of the aisle. I don't know. They'll try to bring back this what was that? SB1, SB13, mm-hmm. Which
SB1, yes.
SB1 in 2013. They're going to try to bring that back and try to say that was the bill that should have been passed. It's the one that fixes Illinois now. And I just want to be on record, at least as Ted, saying I totally disagree and think that is another can kick. The reason it's going to be popular is because it's going to be used as, it's a politically viable thing. Well, if the Democrats were willing to pass it back in 2013, they're surely going to be willing to pass it now. We need reform. So let's go over that one. And I think that's just not an honest position. I think it's a very political expedient thing to grab it and try to pass it, if that happens, by the way. But I think it's a bad idea, and I think we need to get to real pension reform, not that kind of partial. You know, I hate to use the word fake, but it's just not real.
Yeah, ditto. I'm with you, Ted. We both looked hard at the numbers at the time. It wouldn't have solved a whole lot then, and our problem is far worse now than it was then. And it's important to keep in mind here, nobody's talking about slashing these pensions for people that really need them. Reform ideas have to respect the needs that particularly the smaller pensioners have. This problem is not going to ever go away entirely. I don't think anybody has ever proposed a solution that would bring the unfunded liabilities back to zero. We're going to have to wrestle with this problem. But at a minimum, we got to restore a competitive level to other states. We have to reduce that albatross that's hanging around Illinois' neck so that it can provide services with quality at least comparable to other states, with a total tax burden that's at least comparable to other states. That's the real goal. Nobody likes to welch on our promises, but you have to do what you have to do to make the state viable again, to stem the flight of the tax base. And that can be done without unfairly burdening people that really need these pensions, in my view.
I think that's right, Mark. And, we try to, as we've spent a lot of time on these problems, and we've looked at a lot of plans across the country, in particular, John and I, when we were working on this probably 7-8 years ago, there's a decent move towards 401k style plans, which I know it's a bad word in the public sector. It's what everybody in the private sector, virtually everybody has. But there's a big move towards that. And as we looked at that, John and I found, wait a minute, we had no idea because nobody ever talked about it. But 20 years ago, well, I guess it's now 23 years ago, back in the state had already created a 401k style plan for the state university employees. And so this has always been kind of the secret or that nobody knows about. This plan has been right under our nose and nobody knew it. And this university plan is a 401k style plan. There's 20,000 people in Illinois in the state university, the public system, that have joined the 401k style plan. They said no thank you to pensions, and they went to this 401k style plan. And the plan, what it does is it requires the workers to put in 8% of their money into the 401k plan, and the state matches it with a 7%. So each pay period, these people get 15% of their value of their paycheck put aside. Every 2 weeks or however often they get paid. And they have been able to participate in the growth of the stock market for these past 21 years without having to worry about the politicians reaching their hands in there or not funding it or anything like that. They're free from this pension crisis because they control their accounts. It's their own money. It's in their own account, just like private sector people have. So it's funny that for a long time we've had this problem. And we've had the solution, or at least a part of the solution, sitting right there in front of us, just waiting to be, in speaking in Microsoft Office terms, just copy paste, grab it and give it to the other public sector employees, freeze the pension plan where it is today, let everybody keep what they've earned, what they've already earned. But going forward, we move into a new plan. And that's just the obvious thing to do for if you're trying to fix this problem. Protect what people have earned, but start a new plan.
Yeah, it is astonishing, Ted, that SERS, the State University Retirement System, nobody's dying there, nobody's dumpster diving. People go into the plan voluntarily, they're happy with it. And why there's so much opposition to turning to that kind of thing more broadly is beyond me. The solution is sitting there in front of our faces. Part of the solution.
Well, there's a lot of people worried about 401ks in the private sector. A lot of the plans are, a 3% contribution by the employee and maybe a match, maybe not by the employer. And you can borrow against your plan in the private sector. So there's some, maybe some bad behavior in the private sector, but there's ways to structure this public sector plan such that, 15% of your money set aside each pay period. That's a lot of money. And if done properly, and don't let, I hate to say don't let, but if the public sector wants this, don't let people borrow against it. Make sure that money's set aside. The compounding impact of these markets and the returns we've had, and hopefully, we would expect that over time we're going to keep doing the same thing. People can put aside a lot of money and not have to be reliant on politicians for their retirements. And that's my key goal is, why the heck do we have politicians running people's retirements? These politicians have proven over and over again that they're making a disaster of the state. They shouldn't be allowed to make a disaster of people's retirements as well.
Well, we intend to stay on top of this topic, do what we can to make sure candidates continue to get asked about it, lawmakers continue to get pressed on it, the press continues to be informed about it. God knows we have other problems to deal with, and it's not that those aren't equally serious, but this is one that has to stay in the public consciousness, and we hope that listeners stay informed about it, continue to ask their legislators about it, put pressure on wherever they can, do whatever they can, and recognize that this is something that must be dealt with if Illinois is going to be restored to what it should be. Unless we have anything else, fellas, we'll sign off for this edition of the Dialogue by Wire Points. Thanks, Ted. Thanks, John.